Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the July 31 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And we'll discuss the marketplace, too, with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer with Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's begin our discussion with this question. I have been on vacation for the week, Bill Mayer. How did the marketplace act this week, and what's the news item that you think is most important?
Well, it's been very choppy. I think, of course, we had our typical, progress report on Monday, and that came in a little bit lower conditions on the beans than some people thought. And we had a nice reaction early Monday evening there in the bean market. But then there are some margin changes and things like that on that were announced in overnight, and the beans ended up lower on Tuesday. But we've just been choppy back and forth here, and a pretty wide range on beans and, wide enough on corn, and really not any real strong direction.
When we don't have direction, Dan Zwicker, sometimes we refer to that as congestion. Maybe some building of either a bottom or a top, one of the two. What is your opinion at this point of what's happening in the marketplace?
Well, soybeans, November soybeans probably show the most promise anyway of maybe putting in a short-term bottom and in position to take advantage of something bullish that would come along, maybe August rains that some were trying to tout that were going to come at us over the next week or so. If they would maybe come in disappointing, that might generate a short covering pop here in November beans. They do have kind of a little head and shoulders bottom formation. In order to validate that, you would need to move up above this 11.16, 11.18 area, and then you could probably maybe argue that there might be enough power to maybe going up into 11.50 each area, give or take 10 cents. Corn is what I would call more of a congestion. It really, there was a bullish divergence pattern on the indicators, technical indicators, but it just hasn't been able to get any traction to really pop. And is pretty close down against its, July lows or yearly lows. So corn, is struggling the most to try to get something going. And I just think that's just all these yield checks that we're hearing throughout the corn belt that are, kind of in the sky right at the moment.
Any good fundamental reasons at all, Pete Manhart, to build a bottom in the corn, or are the yield checks just going to continue to push this marketplace sideways or lower?
I think we're sideways to lower totally, unless something drastic happens that really ramps up our already good usage or cuts back. Like if it get hot and dry, what's the fill going to be in August? August is important for filling them out, but ear counts, ear size, all that stuff's huge. Where beans, it's just a straight weather forecast. If it's going to rain more, we're going down. If it's going to rain less, we're going up. And as previous said, we could go through 11.50 real easy if it doesn't rain, because they do need rain to fill more so than the corn.
Hey, Bill Mayer, are there places here that you suppose producers might consider making additional sales? And I'm wondering about the carry in the marketplace. This would be for corn, or whether you just step aside at the moment and wait on potentially higher prices in what would be a normal big crop year seasonal pattern.
Well, yeah, I don't think you want to get into just a setback, and I think you have to be ready to act in case you do get some kind of a move up in the markets. But what I've been talking to producers about, I guess, has been number one focus, I think, is to take care of the grain that you've got to take in at harvest time to commercial storage, if you have some of that left that's not sold. I think basis levels are still pretty decent, and you need to at least decide, you know, how you're going to handle that, what kind of rate you may have to pay if you decide to store commercially and that type of thing. The next step, then, I think I agree with you, is to look at some, go back to the, you know, the 101, and we're going to have to look at picking up carry in the market, and I think you look out there to that March corn. If you can get anywhere up there close to $4 on the March corn, which, you know, it hadn't been too far from that here recently at times, you'd look at maybe trying to get some of that locked in, hedged, and then wait for some basis improvement after harvest gets over.
Dan, you have worked inside of the grain business for several years now, both at ADM first and now at CGB. How should producers take advantage of the bins that they have built over the last 5 years for storage of corn?
Well, it makes it tough for a producer to be a hedger, but if they've got some of these new fancy bins and dryers and all that, and I've seen a lot of that this week here in Illinois. I'm told they've got regular elevators better than some of the elevator companies got. But, yeah, I mean, the name of the game, at least at the moment, if this crop is as big as what it indicates at this point in time, is going to be capturing carry. Now, when you start catching, you know, half your crop or 100% of your crop, now that's going to require a lot of margin. And invariably, there'll be something come along, you know, it could be a geopolitical force, or it could be a weather scare in South America, or it could be something that would rally the market. And if you've got your crop hedged up like an elevator, all of a sudden you'll be kind of in the panic mode of margin call business. So it's real tough for farmers to do that themselves. But they could do that through cash forward sales, or they could do that through hedge to arrives. But that will be the game, is to capture carry if they've got a lot of new storage space, capture that carry, and then maybe look at, you know, the winter doldrums, usually December or January, to maybe buy some call options, maybe to offset some of those cash forward sales or hedge to arrive sales in case we would get into a weather market in South America or someplace else, or worries about our own spring market. So, but if you got stories, the name of the game is going to capture carry.
Pete, this is the first year since the build-out of ethanol started in 2007. The producers will have a large crop, an abundant crop. Capacity has been met for ethanol production, meaning we won't be building any more ethanol plants around. And I'm wondering whether producers will have some new basis issues to deal with in terms of short-term pops in the market locally that they might want to be watching more closely than they ever have before, and how that changes the way you might think about dealing with clientele, for instance, that might be near three or four ethanol plants if they happen to be someplace in Iowa or Minnesota, parts of Nebraska and in the Dakotas, or right here even in Illinois and Indiana, where there are more choices to ship to than there have been in recent years. And this will be the test case, I suppose, of the next decade or so. I don't know whether I can go out that far. But really, we've arrived at a new plateau in which producers have to think differently about marketing their crop, I suppose.
Well, we've got huge crop coming. You know, what's the carry out going to be? You have to look at those cash bids around and be ready to move. I don't know. I heard somebody last weekend talking about everybody's going to store it and take less next spring or next summer than it's worth now. I'd almost rather sell it all and buy calls for a set price instead of be subject to it going down a bunch more.
Bill, when you take a look at this and start to consider crop insurance, and I talked to Gary Schnitke today, I know that crop insurance isn't going to pay out very much, if at all. Do you see any other issues related to income that you have been talking to producers about?
No, I mean, I think as guys do their yield checks and get some idea on where yields might come in, you take that number and divide by your divide that in your guarantee and kind of see where your actual put's at, and that's your bottom line there. But I think in a lot of cases in Central Illinois, at least, we're going to have high enough yields that's going to be a low enough number that's probably not really going to come into play. But going back to your question, Todd, on the fall, I mean, I guess I can see this fall, and it's a great question because the one difference that we do have is the ethanol, but I can see this fall being one of those that we haven't had for a while where we have the big crop and we have some trouble getting it into the storage and getting the big thing I'm concerned about, I guess, is the freight. And I hear that, you know, trains for October are already booked in a lot of places. Trains that are going now in some places are waiting 8 days to get the engines there to pick them up and stuff. So I think that can be the issue. I agree with you that it's going to be better east of the Mississippi, I think, than it will be west.
So let me think about this a little bit, because we do have some folks in the Northwest Corn Belt where, and I haven't looked this week, they were down to $1.93, $1.94. When I called and talked to them, it was basically that in those areas, farmers had overproduced corn last year to the tune, I think, of about twice what they probably need to use locally. They have some feedlots and one ethanol plant there. So they're under because they're oversupplied and they can't put corn on rail because they put wheat and oil on rail in those areas, and so corn just has to stay put. But we'll be facing somewhat similar problems in other parts of the Midwest, where rail cars might not be available, or there's just so much supply that we'll be putting corn on the ground, and basis levels could slip dramatically, I suppose. Dan Zwicker, what does it mean to you for producers when they look forward? You're not a fan, I don't think, of filling the bins at this point, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of options out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'll have to, I mean, I think the guys maybe that have river markets and maybe ethanol or close to ethanol plants may have some better basis levels than what you would normally think. But if you're kind of out in the middle of, you got some distance away from those type of locations, then you may have a wide basis. But this crop, I mean, it looks to me like we're going to be late. It doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of stuff harvested by Labor Day unless I'm calculating things wrong. But I mean, I've been through northern Iowa and northern Illinois and even in southern Illinois, things are still pretty well green all the way down to the soil. So it does look like it's going to be a big crop. It's going to be a late crop. It's going to be a wet crop. And harvest is going to drag on, I think. Basis levels will probably get worse as you go through harvest. The better basis levels will probably be up front, because farmers will want to use their own storage first and just refrain from selling these prices. Then they'll probably fill up the elevators, and then when we're pretty well full, then that's when the basis levels could probably fall apart on us. But a farmer, you know, there is no doubt we're in deep soup here. I mean, with this size of crop, if it is that big, and I mean, I hear what everybody else is hearing, you know, the big yield checks. And if it's that big, we're going to push our carry over that 2.2 billion bushel level. And then the question is whether or not you have less corn acres or more corn acres next year. And even if you came in the same, you're probably going to continue to build stocks. And that's the worrisome part, is that the whole ethanol demand boom that we saw through the 07 through 10, 12 area, We've been able to produce a big enough crop to take care of that, plus the livestock and plus the livestock, the export. So now I suppose we could return to the point of breakout when the market started breaking out of that kind of a $3 50 high point to sort of that was kind of the breakout point in 2005-06 when we started marching our way to $8, and that's kind of what it looks like, because there's no new demand factor on the horizon to eat up the type of crops that we can produce if we have favorable weather. And with all of these acres that have been brought into production over the past several years because of the high prices, you know, the function of the market now is to push those acres back in the conservation acreage reserve, and that's going to take some time. You just don't do that in 1 year.
Bill, I'm considering a couple of things at this point. Is there something producers might do on basis contracts at the moment? Do they deliver to the elevator early before they put corn in their own bins to take advantage of better basis if they've got sales that they really do need to make across the scale? And then drying expense. That could be a serious problem again this year.
Yeah, I'm not totally convinced that, I mean, 2009 was an awfully late year, but we planted so much later. As I've been going through, at least in this part of the country, I mean, we got corn planted very timely, and if you look at our growing degree days, we're not that far behind, actually pretty close to normal. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to be an early crop by any means. I certainly wouldn't say that, but I don't know that it's going to be the 2009 type crop that we had. Going to your question, I think basis contracts certainly need to be looked at. The problem with that I see is if you just go out there and lock in the basis, you're still open to the futures, and I'm not sure I want to be in that position. You know, the thing that it does for you is it allows you to deliver to the elevator and not have to, you know, pay the storage to hold the crop, but you still could be subject to, you know, lower futures prices. So I'm more of the tune, I guess, you know, depending on the guy's situation, what he's already got sold and that part of it. You know, if you're going to lock the bases in, maybe you just look at making sales and then look for that opportunity, as Dan mentioned earlier, to come in and maybe get some calls bought back, you know, at some point down the road. I think the difference between whether you sell the carry in the market now and use the futures market, or whether you sell the cash, is strictly when you have to deliver the corn commercially, and the fall stuff, I think you need to be probably acting on prior to harvest.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 31st day of July. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's continue our conversation, but turn to soybeans now. Pete Manhart, what do you do with the soybeans? Because you're looking at probably a pretty good crop here. Unlike corn, you're still looking at better prices rather than completely bad prices.
Well, you know, I would be a seller of an awful lot of grain, and then when we have harvest, look to replace it with calls.
And Bill, how about you?
Well, I guess the difference I see in beans versus the corn, I think we have such a tight supply of old crop soybeans that I don't see the basis problem, at least early on beans. I think you could see a period there maybe where things get pretty hairy as far as trying to, you know, keep the bean movement going. So I don't know that you need to lock stuff in from a cash standpoint, but certainly, you know, having some sales made either in the futures or, you know, through forward contracts, I think is a good idea.
What does your experience tell you, Dan?
Well, I would say that, you know, the markets have in the past have had a tendency to have a pre-harvest rally usually after the August crop report, unless it's totally a killer and just kills everything. And I guess I would be looking at some kind of pre-harvest rally going into Labor Day, whether it would be maturity concerns, early frost concerns. Maybe USDA doesn't give these big crop guys the number that they want, and they may be forced to short cover. But if we would get a decent pop, I think it would be an opportunity to put some put protection on as we go on down into harvest, because if we do follow a seasonal pattern, September is an awful strong down month into the first week of October, and there is a lot more downside price risk in this market if you look at the long-term chart. So there's significant price risk if this crop does turn out to be as big as what everybody wants to make it.
On the other hand, demand for U.S. soybeans from China, from other parts of the world, remains strong?
Oh, demand is super. It's not as good as last year. But see, we've probably sold 80 million bushels more soybeans in the old crop year than what we're going to be able to deliver. So those are all going to be rolled on into the new crop. And we've sold a lot of new crops. So we do have a good program on for the fall months, and that's going to be supportive to cash soybean prices.
And finally, can each of you take some time at the end here and give producers your best thoughts about marketing plans for corn and soybeans? And maybe we should start with you, Bill Mayer.
Well, I guess my focus, and I'll just kind of repeat what I said earlier, I think your first step is right now you have to be looking at how you're going to handle any corn that's going to town, and how, you know, if you're going to have it sold ahead, if you're going to have basis contracts on it, if you're going to plan on storing it commercially. You need to talk to the elevators. You need to find out what their policies look like they're going to be. Are they going to have forced sales, that type of thing, and get those plans made. The focus is to get through the next few months here.
Pete Manhart?
Well, I think that you need 40% of next year's crop sold sometime in the next month, especially if we go up like Dan was talking. But I think you need to provide for next year's crop. If this crop is that big this year, what it'll do next year. But I think this year's crop, we need to have lots and lots, a big percentage of it sold. And then when we see fall lows, be ready to replace it. But I think that Bill's idea of what you're going to have to take town, you better have made plans for with the elevator. And I think that's a very good, you know, do you need to sell it now, or are you going to wait till the dead dog days of harvest to sell it? And what will it be then versus now? And then be ready to replace it in the dead dog days of harvest.
And Dan Zwicker.
I would just caution everyone, if you do a basis contract or DP contract, don't fall asleep. Because we're in a carry market, and those type of moves, if you do that, you need to have some kind of upside target that's reasonable that can be attained if it comes along, because you don't want to get yourself caught into one of those and just keep hanging on and hanging on, because those kind of contracts can be disastrous if we're in a sideways to lower type market through the winter months.
Our thanks, of course, to Dan Zwicker from CGB, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Okay, guys, that's it.
Okay.
That should have been direction not to put the bottom in.
Oh, that, I'm telling you about, I don't remember, was it 3 or 4 weeks ago? I had one that was much more bearish than this.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
Oh,
did
yeah.
You?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, just sell it now. That way you don't have to put up the bearishness, and then when it gets low, it's a harvest.
But you know, Pete, they're not going to do that because everything's under cost of production.
I know that.
Yeah.
They're just going to refrain from selling this thing.
Yeah.
I can just see it in their eyes.
Yeah.
Talking to them.
And they've got some of them have the cash stability right now to do that, too, which is, you know.
They don't need the money.
They're forced to, you know.
Yep.
But I've got a lot of my guys that are 60 to 70% sold, they say, on this size crop. And they're not worried at all.
Well, they're in the driver's seat. You know, if they're that way, they're in the driver's seat.
But I've got other guys that haven't sold one dime yet, not one.
Yeah. I've got probably a higher percentage of beans sold by clients than I think I've ever had. So So I'm guessing we're probably going to $12, $13.
that's the way it works, isn't it?
I mean, that little Head and Shoulders, if it's valid, you know,
yeah.
I think you can read it to like $11.80, and that would be like $11.50 type cash beans. If a farmer would be offered that and doesn't take it, then go buy a call, I think you'd be a little crazy. You know?
Yeah, well. You know, you look at where we're at on beans and the volatility. If it doesn't rain for 3 weeks and we skip all these rains, we'll be back at close to that 1180, 12.
Well, and I think that's the same way on corn. I mean, we're at the point now. I mean, the month of August, the way I view August, is a month that you either add bushels or subtract bushels from July 31st prospects. And
right.
If you don't get the rains, you're going to start subtracting bushels. And now how biggest attraction that ends up, who knows? But if it stays dominantly cool and dominantly dry, test weights are not going to be very strong. The pods ain't going to fill out very good.
So the beans that are shoulder high won't have many pods that are filled very well.
So there's still some weather in this market. I know the grain trade is. Everybody's giddy about this big crop. I mean, the grain elevators are all counting their money.
Yeah, some of it got almost ridiculous there for a while.
But, I mean,
we're in 250 and 270 farm averages in this area, and, you know, I haven't ever seen that, but there's always a first time, I guess.
Yeah.
Counting your chickens before they hatch, I think.
I'm not sure they're going to be bragging about
that chicken.
A bunch of corn.
No.
But no doubt, I mean, the big yields should be Illinois. If I, you know, is any state better than Illinois?
Nebraska and Indiana that are in good shape.
We have a conference call every 2 weeks, and we got a guy from Nebraska that, and he said this today that this was the first time here in the last week or so that he's been able to really see the difference between the dry land and the irrigated stuff.
Irrigated, yeah.
That it's been good enough that he had told me 2 weeks ago that the biggest problem they had was they hadn't fertilized enough on the dry land for the kind of yield they were going to have.
It's kind of funny because you hear all kinds of things.
Isn't that amazing?
Channel had a meeting, was it last week, I think, in Memphis. And those guys from Nebraska, from Channel, were just dragging tail, apparently, because they were looking at such low prices, and they didn't think they had a crop at all. That there were just large swaths completely gone based on, and they were based off the wind and the hail and the tornadoes.
Yeah, and there definitely was some storms out there too. I'm not downplaying that, but over the whole picture, I'm not sure how big a deal it is.
Well, I thought the same thing, and I asked that question. I said, well, those are usually just local. They might be, you know, even if they're a mile wide, they're not all that long.
I was in crop insurance for 20 years in the hail business and the other, and unless you have an 88, they don't involve that many acres. They can be 60 mile long, but the bad stuff's only 2 to 3 mile wide. You can be in a field, one corner is 100% gone, and a quarter mile away, it's zero. There's no damage. So
yeah,
I think they overlook how bad it really is on those things.
Well, that's what I thought, and I questioned that, but was put back in my chair.
Well, that's all right.
Now, Minnesota. So
we are seeing that. We're doing a lot of surveys this week as a company, and we are seeing some damage.
We had some pretty violent weather there for a while.
We are seeing some green snap and some poor pollinations due to gooseneck corn and all that kind of stuff. But whether or not, I mean, as far as our yield checks go, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, it's still a big crop, you know. And
they've got these hybrids built where the wind does more damage than it used to, I think, because they're just so, you know, built to grow so fast and, you know, do so much in a hurry there. The wind seems like it takes its toll more than it did. I know farmers have a lot more interest in wind insurance and stuff than they used to.
Right.
Well, when they go out and take counts, how they count in the second year?
That's a good question.
I was thinking about that.
Well, there are
good second years and on every plant.
What do you call a second year, I guess? And then are you going into the middle of the field?
Yeah.
Well, and really the question there is, how's the NASC going to count?
I know. So do you?
And is that second ear going to be ready when the first ear is ready?
Oh, that's a good
question.
So
is it going to blow out the rear end?
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how that counts up. But would you count? I guess I'd double the number of ears I pull, and instead of I was pulling, number 6, 12, and 18, I guess I'd double the number of ears and start from the top. And if it's a double ear, you just pull the second one with it.
I'm still a naysayer, I guess, because I'm an old fart that taught years ago that usually the second ear doesn't amount to anything, and if it does, it's usually a problem because it screws up the moisture at harvest. So you harvest it and blow it out the rear end, so it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, Pete, when I was a kid, that my dad used to send me out there to cut them suckers, he called them out.
You cut them out. Dad stopped letting us do that when he caught us smoking in the cornfield.
Well, I got to get going here, guys.
It's fun.
Is everybody okay if I run the whole thing?
Run it all. I don't care.
All
right. That's fine.
Good enough. Talk to you all later.
Have a good one.
Yep. Bye-bye now.